Berkman Audio Fishbowl from the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Each week, we feature conversations with leading cyber scholars, entrepreneurs, activists, and policymakers as they explore the bleeding edge of the internet and technology, democracy, law, and society. For more information on the Berkman Center and for more programs like this, visit cyber.law.harvard.edu.
We are very lucky to welcome back to the Berkman Center today, Rebecca McKinnon. Rebecca is a current Berkman affiliate, former Berkman fellow. Prior to her move into the world of academe and teaching journalism, Rebecca was a much celebrated bureau chief for CNN, where she ran CNN's operations in Beijing and then later in Tokyo. Came to Harvard to make an academic change in her career, where she spent time at the Shorenstein Center and then over at the Berkman Center. At Berkman, was responsible for one of our proudest problem children, Global Voices, which we co-founded in 2004. Rebecca has then gone on to the University of Hong Kong, where she's helped launch their digital media department. She is currently a fellow at Open Society Institute. She has emerged as one of the leading scholars on the Chinese internet, particularly on Chinese internet filtering, and is, we just think she's terrific. So we're very, very lucky to have her here, and I'm looking forward to what she has to say, and I'm going to shut up now and hand it over to Rebecca.
Thank you very much. I've given Ethan permission to bash me over the head if I go on too long, so if you see that happening, don't worry, it's with my consent.
And affectionate, so yes.
Yes. When Clinton visited China in the 90s, he once said that trying to control the internet is like trying to nail Jell-O to the wall. And there's been a lot of discussion since about the extent to which the Chinese government has or hasn't managed to control the internet. And so I thought I would start with just this quote from Lao Tzu, this Taoist quote about, you know, if you're trying to control something, grasping it concretely is perhaps the least effective way of controlling it, and that is certainly the case with the internet. I move on from Lao Tzu to the Backstreet Boys, which is the only logical segue, to an example of how the Chinese government and the Chinese Communist Party has really completely lost control over Chinese culture. I think if we have some audio, this is, if you can hear this, let's see, did somebody, here we go. What this is these are some guys in a dorm in Guangzhou in southern China who a few years ago were horsing around in front of a webcam and were lip-syncing to the Backstreet Boys. They were so funny, you know, they uploaded this onto the web. They were so funny, they were instantly a web hit. These guys are now famous. They have recording contracts, singing contracts. Their careers are completely made just because one day they sat in front of a webcam and did a lot of silly things. And so there's now a fan site for these guys. Even the guy playing video games in the back is, he has fans and so on. And so the point is here, and you know, we could just sit here all day watching this video, but the point is that Chinese government, Chinese Communist Party has lost control over Chinese culture in many ways. And so if you're a young person today and you want to be famous and you're talented, you don't have to wait for somebody to let you on TV or you know, if an author or a poet, you don't have to wait for a gatekeeper, an official gatekeeper, to allow you to be published. That there are now people in China, novelists, poets, singers, who are completely circumventing the state apparatus that in which people are vetted for their political correctness before they can get into the state media and publishing, and they are becoming famous and having a huge impact on youth youth culture in China, which the Communist Party has really arguably completely lost control over. And the internet is having such an effect on youth culture. There's some interesting statistics coming out about how now for 66% of Chinese young people, the web is the primary source of video entertainment. This is more than the United States. 64% of the video that these people surveyed discovered was found through social networking sites and instant messaging and so on. So in a lot of ways, the web, because Chinese kind of official culture is considered quite boring and annoying and lobotomized by many young people, the government has lost control over culture, and the web has really facilitated that. Yet at the same time, despite this lost control over culture, nobody's managed to organize an opposition party on the web. You do not have a Chinese Lech Walesa emerging from the web. You do not have any kind of democratic political movement or even a religious movement that succeeded in emerging on the web. Falun Gong tried, and they've been squished rather summarily. Yet at the same time, what you have to understand, which is what brings me back to that Taoist quote about if you try and grasp something, you lose it. The Chinese government would not have prevented this from happening if it were only using censorship and police action. There's a lot more going on. And an example of what's going on the web in China today and the Chinese government's response to the web, just appeared on Sunday when China's premier Wen Jiabao gave a two plus hour live chat online with China's netizens through one of China's major web forums that's run by the Xinhua News Agency. And I'm just going to show you a little bit of this video, which is of course now all over YouTube. So, most of you don't know Chinese, but what's interesting about this video is that basically the moderator who's taking questions off the web from Chinese netizens all over the country, she's asking him in this particular clip, we hear that you know how to cook and that your favorite dish is this particular dish called Hong Shao Rou, which is a kind of stewed pork. And we hear you're really good at making dumplings. And do you still cook? And what's your favorite dish? This is, you know, a question from the public. And then he kind of goes on to talk about how, yeah, well, I can't cook anymore because I'm too busy. But when I was young, my wife and I were both working. And so whoever got home first would cook dinner. And so, you know, I do know how to cook a little bit. So this is kind of showing a human side of the Chinese leaders that is really kind of being greeted by many in China with a great deal of euphoria. One of the things he said at the beginning of his two-hour-long chat with people on the internet was, he said, you know, I'm going to try my best. You know, I spend about 2 hours or an hour. No, he said, I spend about half an hour to an hour a day online every day. And it's really important for me to know what's going on in China and also to know what the Chinese people think. And this is a really good way for me to find out what people think. And, you know, my mother told me, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about this with all these questions, but my mother told me always to be honest, so I'm going to try and be honest and upfront with you guys. And then this conversation ensues for over 2 hours where people are asking him all kinds of questions about employment problems, economic crisis, you know, a question from a peasant, why hasn't our road ever been fixed? You know, all kinds of questions about corruption even, and in which he said, you know, we need to do a better job at listening to the people and we need more mechanisms for this. So, in other words, the Chinese government is not just responding to criticism and concern by cracking down, jailing people and censoring. It's taking a much more proactive approach. This is an e-government site. This is gov.cn, the central government's e-government site. And they have all kinds of different resources on the site and chat rooms and forums, and including this kind of service center here, which is very interesting. And it opens up, I'm gonna bring up this web page here, so we need audio again. If we could have some audio. You know, China has a lot of web companies and a lot of very talented web developers, and the government is employing a lot of these people too. So, you know, this is... So this is the Chinese online service center, and you can click it. I'll click on the English thing so people can actually read it. But the English one is actually not as useful as the Chinese one, where you can actually go in and get different services. So this is an example of how the Chinese government is trying to say, look, we're going to use the web to respond to people's concerns and try and be of greater service. So another very interesting thing that's just happened the last couple of days is starting this week, you have a yearly event that is beginning. China's Parliament, National People's Congress, is meeting alongside something called the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, which is kind of another consultative body. It's not even legislative, but they meet at the same time, and they meet basically for 2 weeks a year, and essentially the National People's Congress rubber stamps government policy. But there are delegates from all over the country who come to this thing, and they meet in the Great Hall of the People, and there's a great deal of fanfare, and the government tries to kind of clean up the city, and this is where basically annually the premier gives a press conference. And up until now, the only way that the Chinese people kind of got to see the premier in the flesh was that he would give a live press conference to journalists once a year. Now he's actually appearing on the web responding to questions directly. So it's very interesting, this site they created, that this website is run by the People's Daily, and it's run by a section of the People's Daily called the Strong Nation Forum, which is also kind of a part of the site that brings together people who want to, you know, who are kind of proud of their country and want to talk about their strong nation and so on. And so they've created this site, which is basically, you know, here's where you can come to participate in conversations about our nation's governance and give suggestions. So you can sign up for a membership badge, and that'll also give you an account in the system, so you can go into the forums and post questions. And then people on here, there's this thing here with basically a list of headings of different suggestions people are making. And so when I took this screenshot yesterday, you know, there was a suggestion, some suggestions for fighting corruption, suggestions for improving safety in coal mines. You know, we should crack down on ads for illegal medicine as hard as you're cracking down on porn. You know, some somewhat, you know, outspoken kinds of suggestions going on. And in these, when you click on the link and you go in, you see not only people's suggestions, but a comments thread. And people are posting all kinds of comments. Now, this is one very edgy proposal that has been making the rounds quite a bit on the Chinese blogs and chat rooms. Somebody actually posted and succeeded in publishing on the site a suggestion that the one-child policy be ended. You know, this is on, like, the People's Daily site. They let it on. And all kinds of very interesting reactions ensue on here. You know, one person says, don't we have enough people? You know, so actually in favor of keeping the one-child policy. Then somebody else says, you know, uphold the reproductive rights of the Han Chinese. Interesting. Deng Xiaoping himself said the one-child policy would only be for 30 years. You know, they're implying time's up, you know. So there's kind of this whole, you know, this person says, well, you know, you should do it a different way. You should just reward childless people with better health care and, you know, kind of regulate it that way rather than, you know, punishing people for having extra kids. So there's like this long discussion about whether this is a good idea or not. And actually there's quite a variety of views. And this is all up there on a People's Daily website. So what's going on here? Is this Chinese cyber glasnost? Is that what's going on? Well, let's think about this. Because this is being greatly celebrated. The fact that the premier went online and chatted with the netizens for a couple of hours. The fact that you're getting these sort of e-Congress sites going on, policy discussion sites going on. This is being celebrated in quite a number of government websites as internet democracy. You know, the internet is providing a new forum for democratic discussion in China. And these are actually phrases you're seeing in official websites quite a lot. Not so fast. Okay, a blogger named Wang Xiaofeng, who's often quite critical and sometimes on the edge of getting in trouble, he wrote a blog post yesterday in which he said people are getting too emotional about the fact that our premier went on and, you know, talked about how he likes to make, you know, stewed pork and so on. And, you know, can't we all just calm down about this? And he said, frankly, without a proper political structure, all that Premier Wen can do is interact with people on an emotional level. You know, basically he points out this is all meaningless. It doesn't really mean anything. So, guess what? I saw his blog post yesterday. This morning, it's a blank page. Due to certain problems, Wang Xiaofeng's blog is closed temporarily for a few days. He hosts this on a server inside China, and so basically he took it down himself under pressure. He was told to close his blog for a while, so he put up this message. And then a friend of his posted a message on another blog, kind of relaying a message from Wang Xiaofeng, saying, sorry, due to a sudden case, plus the two space conferences, because if they say two conferences, like in just as a normal word, then that's a key word that might cause the blog post to get censored. So basically he's like saying two, rather than writing two conferences, he's writing two space conferences. And so then he continues on writing this way, plus having mentioned the pre-space, mere space, when, you know, in other words, premier when, but he couldn't write it that way. Therefore, Teacher Wang's blog has been temporarily smutted. Now, this is code for the fact that in January there was an anti-smut campaign, which also resulted in a lot of political websites being taken down. And so the lingo on the web has become that if you get censored, you get smutted. And so that's what he's saying there. Please have patience until the two space meetings are over. So much for Chinese cyber glasnost, right? Something's going on, but dissidents, Hu Jia, who is now serving jail time for subversion, he's still in jail. His wife still remains under virtual house arrest with her baby. Liu Xiaobo, one of the authors of the Charter 08, calling for democratic federalism, which came out in December, he remains in detention awaiting charges. Or awaiting trial, he's been charged. This is Gao Zhisheng, a civil rights lawyer. He basically disappeared recently. He has been detained in the past and tortured. And Wang Qi is another gentleman currently under arrest for subversion. He tried to found a couple of different opposition parties, one of them called the China Netizen Party. So, you know, the netizens can talk to the government sort of on the government's terms, but it's still proscribed. So what is this then, cybertarianism? Is this a new form of internet populist authoritarianism? Wen Jiabao isn't the first Chinese leader to go online and talk to the citizens. President Hu Jintao in June of last year went online for 10 minutes and stressed just how important it is. Oops, I don't know what's going on with. Stop it. I don't know what's going on there. Okay. Just click on the main slide. It's doing something strange. I'll just click on that. Yep, there we go. But President Hu Jintao said last summer that it's really important, we need to pay attention to public opinion, and the internet is a really important vehicle for this. So clearly the government's making some kind of effort, but they're not going all the way, are they? So what's going on here? There's a scholar named Yongnian Zheng, Zheng Yongnian in Chinese, who's at the University of Nottingham, who wrote a very helpful book that helps us kind of think about this. It's called Technological Empowerment, the Internet State and Society in China. And he talks about a concept called authoritarian deliberation. What he points out is that different authoritarian countries have different amounts of deliberation going on. You can have a very non-deliberative authoritarian state like, say, Burma or North Korea. You can also have an authoritarian state where there's actually a great deal of public deliberation going on about policy, but it is still not institutionally a democracy. And one could argue that China, because of the internet, has become a great deal more deliberative than it ever was before. Yet, when it comes to democratic institutions, when it comes to rule of law, when it comes to protections for free speech, there's been no change. So that's an interesting thing to think about as we're thinking not only about China, but thinking about the internet's impact on potentially on democracy or on something else in other countries. And, you know, just because Obama puts all this stuff on the web, does that really mean the United States is more democratic? I don't know. We just need to think about these things. And I think China is a very interesting example when you're kind of looking at it from the other end. Now, one of the things I think, if we're thinking about this idea of cybertarianism, which may be kind of a internet-facilitated form of deliberative authoritarianism, perhaps, to throw a lot of words in a string, I think one of the reasons why, or one of the barriers to understanding cybertarianism as we're seeing it develop in China, it may be the way in which the West tends to think about Chinese internet control. And Lokman has actually done a great deal of work on this. He wrote an excellent paper last year, which I recommend that everybody read. But, you know, I think Westerners tend to think about China's information control kind of like the Great Wall. You know, they've put up this barrier, and they're blocking the oppressed Chinese people from accessing outside information, and, you know, ultimately it's going to be as ineffective as the Great Wall was in keeping the barbarians out. In other words, a kind of Iron Curtain 2.0, as Luckman put it in his paper. But is that what's really going on in China? I mean, all this stuff I just showed, is that Iron Curtain 2.0? Is it just all you need to do is lift the Great Firewall and people are going to be free? This is the Great Firewall in action. I don't need to, in the heart of the study of global internet filtering, I don't need to explain too much about how the Great Firewall works. But this internet filtering is only one aspect of internet censorship in China. It's only one very small part. And it basically only pertains to websites that are hosted on servers outside of China. So everything that's hosted on servers inside of China is controlled differently. And this is, of course, what the Great Firewall in action looks like. But when it comes to the internet inside of China, the Great Wall, Firewall, Iron Curtain kind of metaphor doesn't work very well. And a net nanny metaphor might work a little bit better. And this phrase was coined by a blogger named Jeremy Goldcorn, who's based in Beijing. And so more kind of this paternalistic state that protects people from themselves and kind of keeps order. And so Google trying to operate in China has been subject to the net nanny, in that this is international Google with a search on Tiananmen massacre. This is google.cn with the same search, and basically none of the gory pictures are there, and you only get pictures of Tiananmen Square and the Nanjing massacre, which was a World War II massacre by Japanese against Chinese. So basically kind of irrelevant results. But then again, Baidu, which is China's largest search engine, has greater market share than Google, brings you no results. So you have a net nanny going on, but it's delegated to companies, and this function is exerted to different degrees depending on the company. Chinese blog hosting services. Most Chinese bloggers, there are 30 to 50 million bloggers in China. Most of them are not afraid, staying up awake at night, afraid of the police knocking on their door. In part, it's because their blog hosting services are protecting them from themselves. This is an attempt to post a blog post about the Tiananmen Mothers, which is a group of parents of people who were killed in 1989. So I try to post this thing in the back end of Tianya, which is one of China's major blog hosting services, and I can't even post it. I get an error message that says I've gone into a moderation queue. Of course, it never comes out of the moderation queue. I try and post it on another site, Sina.com, which is one of China's most popular blog hosting services. Actually, this is a different post. This is a post about an explosion in Xinjiang province, which is China's Muslim province in the far northwest. I succeed in posting it, but within 24 hours, it's gone. This is the error message. It's very cute. Interestingly, I did this long project, which I won't talk about too much now, but I'll just kind of refer to it to people who are interested. I basically spent some time, roughly a year, posting all kinds of content across 15 different blog hosting services in China just to see what got censored and what didn't. There's a huge amount of variation from company to company in terms of what they censor, how much they censor, and so on. I've given the companies letters because if I name the companies publicly, the ones that censor less are going to get in trouble. So I'm not publishing that aggregate information. But anyway, there's a paper in First Monday. You can find out a lot more about Chinese net nanny censorship, which is not filtering, if you want to know more about that. But is net nanny even the whole story? Another metaphor or another way of looking at the way the Chinese government manages the internet might be hydroelectric engineering. A Chinese journalist pointed out that most of China's leaders today come from an engineering background. And a lot of them do think about management and so on in this kind of way. And is it really about, you know, when the storm comes, you let water out, when it's drought, you put the dam up, you know, that there's constantly raising levels and kind of adjusting and so on, just as, you know, during sensitive periods such as right now during the two Congresses, people are being warned to shut up. The censorship on the blog hosting services has been ramped up several notches, and then it loosens up for a while, and then it tightens and so on. Is that a better way of thinking about it? One example is last year in Guizhou province, in a county called Wang'an, there was a huge riot. Thousands of people trashed the Public Security Bureau in Wang'an. Why? Because a young woman turned up dead in a river. And there was suspicion that turned out most likely to be unsubstantiated, that it was murder rather than suicide, as the coroner had ruled. And there was also a rumor that went around that the people who'd killed her were related to the Public Security Bureau chief in that county. And so apparently the relations between the police and the ordinary people in that particular county had been extremely bad anyway. And so that's all that it took to have the mob go and trash the Public Security Bureau that summer. So what happened? It was very interesting. The government did not completely censor news about Wang'an. What happened was that Xinhua News Agency and the state-run news outlets were all sent and were all allowed to go do investigative reports about what happened. The blogs were censored. So if you were trying to talk about Wang'an as a blogger, the blog hosting services, like I showed, were preventing you from posting. Yet at the same time, if you went on to all the major online news portals in China, there was a ton of news about Wang'an and what happened in the investigation, and here's what the coroner said, and here's the interrogation report from the suspects, and so on and so on. And so in that way, the official version flooded the web, and the less official version became much harder to find. Now, there are always attempts, by clever attempts by people on the web to get around this kind of censorship. So people couldn't talk about Wang An, but they could talk about push-ups. Now, why do you want to talk about push-ups when you're trying to talk about Wang An? Well, it turned out that one of the young men who was interrogated, who'd been with this young woman who died, had been doing push-ups on a bridge at the time that she jumped into the water. And the interrogation report had been on the internet. And so people were talking about how, you know, bizarre it was that, you know, when this young girl was jumping off the bridge, this guy was on the bridge doing push-ups. So since people couldn't talk about Wang An directly, they all started talking about push-ups. And then the word push-ups started getting censored. So people started photoshopping pictures of naked men doing push-ups all over various different scenic spots around China. And they also started doing all kinds of... So there are all these, you know, you just started seeing all over the Chinese internet all these weird photoshops of push-ups. And if you had come from outer space or even not outer space, if you just weren't spending a lot of time on the internet, on the Chinese internet, and just kind of passed through, you'd have absolutely, you'd just think these people were completely mad. So another example that Ethan has cited in his talks before is this thing called the river crab. And basically, this is another meme that appeared on the Chinese internet in protest of censorship. And you often see these kinds of Photoshop memes coming up when people are pushing back against censorship. And what happened was is that President Hu Jintao has this slogan called harmonious society. And the whole point is that we're trying to build a harmonious society, and we're trying to prevent unrest and so on. So we have to, you know, have social controls and so on. So then when people were getting censored, they would talk about how they'd been harmonized. And so for a period, this is about a year or so ago, on the Chinese blogs, people kept talking about, oh, I wrote such and such, but it got harmonized. But then the word harmonize got harmonized. So people were getting censored for writing too much about harmonized. So they changed the characters, because it just so happens that the word for harmonious, he xie, sounds really similar to the word for river crab, he xie. And so people just started talking about, I've been river crabbed, and talking about river crabs all over the web. So you're trying to do keyword analysis of what the Chinese web is talking about. It's really, really hard, because it makes no sense. FYI, for those people who like doing keyword analysis of the web. But so then what people started doing is they thought this was very funny, you know, the river crab. So they started doing photoshops of crabs. And it also happened, there's another political slogan by Jiang Zemin, who's the president before Hu Jintao, which is called the Three Represents. And I won't get into the whole thing about the Three Represents, but it's a political slogan by Jiang Zemin, let's just suffice it to say. Now the political slogan in Chinese, Three Represents, is Sangga Dai Biao. Now, if you reverse those words again around, it's Dai Sangga Biao, which means wears three watches. So basically, this Photoshop is making fun of two successive presidents in China and their political slogans. Now, it's crazy. And this thing just started appearing all over the web, kind of as a protest. And so you start seeing these memes around as a way for people to express their frustration with political control in a humorous manner. Now, the best anti-censorship protest so far, and this is what Ethan has been waiting for all day, is a protest video that has emerged in frustration in the wake of an anti-censor or an anti-pornography crackdown that took place in January. And while a lot of smutty content was removed from the web, a lot of hard-hitting political discussions were also removed from the web, using smut somehow as an excuse, kind of a stretch. But so a lot of people got smutted, as I was talking about earlier. And so some clever people created this video, which I will show you now. Let me just get it here. Yeah. How many people here speak Chinese? Okay, how many people in this room know how to say F your mother in Chinese? Yeah. So Cao Ni Ma is alpaca sheep. Cao Ni Ma is F your mother. So this is like a cute little children's chorus about the alpaca sheep, the alpaca sheep. And it's just saying F your mother, F your mother, F your mother. Over and over and over again. It just gets sillier and sillier as it goes on. And, you know, after I saw it, I couldn't get out of my head for days. And it was, you know, it's one of those incredibly viral things. And it's actually so viral that not only have people made about, you know, I don't know, 50 different versions of it, but now I'm starting to see essays all over the Chinese web. It, like, actually rather serious intellectual essays with titles such as The River Crabs versus the Alpaca Sheep. How do we know that it was anti-censorship?
Yeah.
Because of the people who made it and because of the conversations surrounding it.
But if you were to see
a
video without knowing that, you wouldn't know.
That's the way it is with a lot of stuff on the Chinese web, that if you see things out of context, you have no way of knowing what the real point is. And again, this is why keyword analysis of the Chinese web is doomed to fail, in my view. Because there's so much discussion of alpaca sheep going on the Chinese and river crabs on the Chinese web right now, and it's really a discussion. What it is, it's a discussion that there's this essay that keeps getting kind of reposted and commented upon over and over again, and the point is that river crabs being the censors, and the alpaca sheep representing people who are against censorship, who is winning. And so this is the discussion, that it's kind of a clash going on the Chinese internet and in the society between the river crabs and the alpaca sheep. And this is a discussion about freedom versus control, is what this is really a conversation about. So what's going on? Do we have cyber civil war looming? This is another thing about the Chinese internet, that as experienced by... This is a drawing that was made about a year ago by a Chinese cartoonist. And for those of you who read Chinese, you know, that says nationalism up in the tower. And that says, over there, one of the banners says, you know, long live freedom and democracy. And there are people who've been lynched and are hanging from the balustrades there. And there are people crapping in the river. And, it, you know, anyway, this is meant to be a depiction of flame wars versus kind of liberals and conservatives and nationalists and people who have different points of view politically about this tension between control and freedom on the Chinese internet. Cyber nationalism in China is very, you know, the alpaca sheep are not the only people on the internet. You also have people who are very proud of their country and feel that those people pushing for freedom and democracy are really just a bunch of, you know, CIA plants. And you'll find a lot of those people who feel that way on sites such as Anti-CNN, which was set up last year by a bunch of students, including some journalism students, as media criticism, who feel that the Western media is basically out to demonize China. And so they pick through Western media reports about China, many of which contain errors about China in different ways. They pick through it and kind of use those errors as basically evidence that we're all out to get them. And these people, you know, these are people with strong emotions. These aren't just paid shills. One example of that kind of nationalist sentiment that is very prevalent online today in China is an example. Vice President Xi Jinping, who is he's probably going to be China's president someday. He recently took a trip to Mexico and gave a speech in which he said, "Some foreigners who've eaten their fill have nothing better to do than point their fingers at our affairs." Shi bao fan mei shi gan. And Lachman has created a Facebook support group for those of us who've eaten our fill and have nothing better to do than point our fingers. The response on the Chinese internet was very positive to what he said. This was one essayist who talked about how, you know, this shows that, you know, China needs to be more frank in standing up to foreign critics, and we need to stop, you know, rolling over and playing dead when foreigners say we have problems. Or you get other types of reactions, like Vice President Xi Jinping is so cool, he trashed the unfriendly foreigners. But you get that kind of sentiment quite a bit on the web. And these people and the people who are kind of consider themselves to be in the alpaca sheep faction get into pretty serious flame wars with one another. Of course, the people on the nationalist side are assisted, but are not entirely comprised of something called the 50 Cent Party, which is that basically at all levels of government now, there are people who are paid and then others who are volunteers to post pro-government commentary around chat rooms, forums, and blogs, and also to try and spin conversation in different directions, and also report on people who are, you know, perhaps getting out of line and might be encouraging people to, you know, take action on things. And there's also something known as cyber vigilantism. And this is also a kind of situation where, you know, you have officials. Two photos there are grabs from a video of some officials who went on a junket to Africa, and somebody posted the video online from their holiday video. Somehow they got a hold of it, put it online, and now basically, you know, there are these cyber vigilantes on the web who've kind of figured out who these officials are, tracking down where they live, and basically ruining their careers. And so you get that kind of thing going on too. But the question is, you know, we've seen this before, actually. It's called Red Guards. And Mao, actually, one of the reasons why the Red Guards came to be was that Mao was very frustrated with the corrupt complacency of local and mid-ranking bureaucrats, and lacking any other mechanism, he sent the cyber, well, not at that time cyber vigilantes, but, you know, idealistic young people kind of after these guys. And so, again, some people are questioning, you know, it's really great that the internet is enabling us to expose people, but, you know, within what context? And then, of course, there is the cyber police. I'm going to move on quickly because I'm running out of time. But, you know, what are we having here? I'm throwing out a lot of kind of terms here as I'm working through ideas with my book. Do we have a form of cyber Bonapartism emerging in China where basically you have a strong centralized state that is using various mechanisms to garner enough popular support to maintain legitimacy and make everybody feel they're a lot freer and a lot more democratic than they really are? Is that what's going on in China? Do you also have that mixed in perhaps with a bit of paternalist Confucianism and sort of a desire culturally to be run by kind of just and moral leaders who will talk to you on the web about how they like to cook, and you know, you can complain to them about your nasty local officials and so on. You know, what is it that we have going on here? Then, of course, you have people like the people involved with the Chinese blogger conferences who are saying, look, we need more of an independent platform for discussion and dialogue. We really want to use the web to carve out a more independent civil society in which people can really have a unfettered social discourse. And you have people like Isaac Mao who I won't say cyber Maoism because it would be unclear which Mao we're talking about, but who points out, you know, the problem is with all this, we can't have free speech until we have free thinking, and things are so manipulated, how do we get there? And so he has this idea of shareism, with the idea that people can use social networking tools and the internet to share information, and it's very, it'll make it impossible for someone to be a sort of lost victim of the system because people can speak out. But there's this question that people are raising, you know, that's great, but, you know, let's get back to offline structures again. And so you have people who are talking about, well, you know, internet democracy is great to go on and on about the internet making Chinese society more deliberative and democratic, but are we going to really have real rights until we have things like rational and fair mechanisms for public opinion, you know, between government and citizens, mandated institutional transparency and accountability, things like freedom of information laws that actually work and are enforced, meaningful and robust legal protection for free speech. Until we have that, you can have all these sort of e-Congress things going on, and they pick and choose what they put on the site, they pick and choose what they allowed to be showed. The dissidents stay in jail, but everybody's like all excited because they get a chance to have their voice heard, sort of. So what does this all mean? And I need to wrap up quickly.
Yeah.
So, which is good because I'm kind of getting to broaden this out beyond China, because I'm trying to think a bit about, you know, I've just painted this picture of what's happening in China, and why should anybody care, you know, beyond China? What does it mean for the rest of us? What does it mean for the global internet? Now, this guy David Post has recently, of whom many people know here, I think probably, I know Ethan knows him, has recently written a book about kind of debates over internet freedom and control called Jefferson's Moose. And he's talking mainly about the American context, but about the debate between Jeffersonians and Hamiltonians about where the set point should be, or where the balance should be between protections of free speech and the need for control to prevent chaos in society or tyrannies of the majority and so on. And where does that balance lie? And I think, as I've reflected a little bit, there is actually a lively Chinese debate raging about this kind of issue. Where does the balance lie between freedom and control, and what, you know, how do you build a more democratic society? It's hampered by censorship and complicated by strong nationalism, but how do we perhaps support that debate? And how do we help enable that debate or connect with that debate? Obviously, language is a problem, and there are many other problems. But just coming to the global internet, right? I mean, what's happening now? We're building globally this network layer between governments and citizens. We have this network layer of web and IT services, and this is a global network layer. And as you can see, I've just spent a long time talking about, you know, how that layer is playing out in between citizens and government in China. But this is the internet. And so globally, we do have this issue now where, you know, governments are putting pressures on this layer and trying to shape this layer to influence citizens. And citizens are, of course, trying to use this layer to influence governments. But what's going to be the nature of that layer so that it can be a transparent medium between citizens and governments and not an opaque arm of incumbent power? And that's a question that we have not just in a place like China, but of course globally. And how do we connect up that conversation? I don't have a lot of good answers. But I think it's an important conversation to have, because I do worry if we don't think about these issues more. I think there's an assumption that authoritarian countries, thanks to the internet, will move over to the democratic camp. But is there also a possibility that we could all meet in the middle? And some of these cyber Bonapartism kind of tendencies that we see in China, is the democratic West immune from that? I think not. So how do we think about some of these shared experiences, or that are perhaps more shared than we like to imagine? And coming back to this layer, this is my final slide, so we can get into discussion, because I'd really like to hear people's reaction. So we've got this layer again, coming back to the layer slide, and there are some efforts to kind of, you know, make sure that companies aren't doing things like, you know, censoring in an opaque manner so that people don't know they're being manipulated. And got the Global Network Initiative, which the Berkman Center has been involved with, to try and get companies, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, other internet and telecoms companies, to set up a code of conduct for free expression and privacy so that they are not used as an opaque arm of power to infringe upon people's rights to free expression and privacy. There are some people who are calling for various kinds of regulation, something called the Global Online Freedom Act. Some people saying that the trade mechanisms need to be brought to bear to make sure that that layer is more transparent. But then you also have, you know, the whole issue of internet governance and technical standards. And as we have this kind of raging debate, really globally, about the balance between freedom and control on the internet, and how do you prevent, you know, how do you protect your children from predators, and how do you protect your banking information, and how do you fight terrorism, and how do you keep the internet functioning, and how do you make sure that you really do have this free and transparent medium? You know, the decisions being made globally about internet governance and technical standards are very important, and the Chinese government is increasingly playing a role in those conversations at the Internet Governance Forum and ICANN, so on. Then, of course, international human rights norms. And people in the human rights community who don't really talk to the technical community very much are very concerned that international human rights norms are being narrowed or eroded, and that's a whole nother conversation one can have. But again, it impacts this layer, and you know, sort of what internationally is considered acceptable government by acceptable behavior by a government plays into all this, and it plays into the conversations people have online about what their government is doing. And finally, so do we need to be pushing back more on this layer? Do we need a much better organized, informed, and equipped global citizenry that, with everybody kind of talking to one another, sharing experiences, and recognizing that we need to do a lot more to make sure that the internet and all the wonderful things and the ability, our ability to use it as a mechanism to, you know, govern ourselves more directly and more democratically, really is able to remain that way and doesn't end up becoming something else. So with that, I'll stop. I'm still thinking through a lot of these ideas, especially the last part of this talk, and so I'm very interested in people's feedback.
So I know that there's a lot of questions in this room. I've just been monitoring the email, and we've had 7 or 8 requests so far for Rebecca to teach the alpaca song. I'm going to request that be perhaps after the session.
Okay.
Maybe we can work something out, maybe on the front porch,
quite
something along these lines.
That.
But if we have non-alpaca-related questions, we'll open the floor
right
up at this point. Sure. Let's start here.
So Rebecca, this is
Hi.
Great. Bill Alford, I admire your work. I think it's really high quality. A couple of observations, questions. So one is, it strikes me that the invitation of people to come forward through the net to leadership echoes of historic Chinese patterns of senior leadership going mm-hmm. out and supposedly engaging, so you know, imperial tours, but not the kind of organized, structured, you know, independent means of expression of popular opinion. Even soliciting mass line
mm-hmm.
and Mao. So you could go way back to imperial days to Mao, Deng Xiaoping's southern tour, kind of echoing it. So it kind of has resonance historically. So that's sort of the first kind of point. And maybe even the whole petitioning process too
mm-hmm.
is a little bit like that, right? I mean, the Xinhan, you know, you come forward,
yeah.
but it's at the discretion of the officials what to take, and horizontal organization is really discouraged. Second point, I mean, it struck me from the day Bill Clinton talked about trying to censor the internet is like throwing Jell-O on the wall and nailing Jell-O to the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, that just seemed to me evidently wrong even then. And obviously you've shown how much more complicated it is, both the force for good and the force not for good. It's a whole vast literature about different technologies. Itia Jocelo Poole, the MIT professor now long dead, about kind of conceit of initial burst of freedom with different new technologies that turn out to be more complicated. And I wondered, with Clinton, and wonder since, is it that people sincerely believe that it will just be liberating, or whether, in his case, the importance politically of appeal appealing to certain constituencies, they were going to fund him. You know, folks in the related industries were like, if they can lend to his opponents, or whether it's a way of avoiding dealing with more complicated human rights issues. You say, well, the internet will do it, so you don't have to press the Chinese on this or that. Secretary Clinton, even last week. Third kind of point, I'm addicted to using the net, but I'm also skeptical about it as a liberating tool in China for another reason you didn't touch on, which is, I don't know if anybody's done research on who in China actually has access to the net in terms of their socioeconomic background in parts of the country. It may just be my ignorance not knowing, but it seems to me it exacerbated. China now has probably the highest Gini
coefficient
divide in any country in the world, just about any major country, even more than the U.S. And it strikes me this exacerbates it, right? The folks who are in the party, the folks who are wealthier, obviously have greater access than poor rural Chinese. Mm-hmm. And so without meaning to, that exacerbates the divides even greater than the Communist Party.
So let Rebecca react. We've got a room full of people.
This is really great feedback. I just got this book on Amazon. It's by a friend of mine who's at Chinese University of Hong Kong. It's about working class use of the internet in China. So after I read it, I'll be able to answer one of your questions much better.
Okay.
But it's Jack Cho, who Luckman knows well and some other people know. The extent to which different people are using the internet for different purposes. But I think, you know, it seems like it's a complicated question. It's definitely that the elites are using the internet much more. And absolutely, this is an echo chamber for the elites to kind of talk to one another at this point, it seems to me, more than it is, you know, if you really want to know what the peasantry thinks, perhaps the internet's not the best way to find out. But if you want to know who are the people who perhaps have the ability to become political leaders, monitoring the internet would be a very useful way to find out. So, but yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting to see, though, just how seriously the government has been taking online public opinion, even though it's totally unscientific, for quite a long time. I mean, even as far as like 2001 during the spy plane incident, when U.S. spy plane went down on Hainan Island after an accident, and people on the web in the Chinese chat rooms were basically against returning the crew and returning the plane, and this actually emboldened the Chinese side to be harder line. And I actually had Chinese officials citing to me that, you know, well, we can't concede too much because it's really obvious from the chat rooms that the Chinese people don't want us to be soft on this issue. You know, so that's an interesting, but you know, who that represents really, because as we know from forums in the States and web behavior kind of generally, the people who are most vocal on the web do not necessarily represent, you know, average opinion. By any means, in any society, so that's very, very interesting to see, you know, if that's really being taken seriously as public opinion. And then it's also compounded by the fact that people with a certain set of opinions are most likely to be censored, and that you've got the 50 Cent Party in there kind of egging on the nationalist side to be more nationalist. It kind of takes things in a fairly skewed direction.
Let's take a few more questions. Let's start with Courtney. Okay. I have to applaud the work you've done. It's very powerful. One question I had was, or one point was that I think you're right in the sense that there is some convergence between democratic countries, in quotes, and you know, countries like China. I mean, I was thinking, although I think you have to perhaps broaden the media that you put into the equation. So, for example, in America, you had AT&T, you know, checking out phones for the U.S. government, and it may not be, the internet may be more left, but Rush Limbaugh and talk radio is more right, and, you know, so they're doing the pushing that's, in some cases, in China, it seems like, is happening online. So I was wondering if there are forums where that is going on. I mean, in other cases, Israel, I know recently, you know, put YouTube videos up to defend itself vis-a-vis the Gaza
conflict. So is that going, are there forums where people are discussing this country to country? And then quick second question is, I think I've heard here at Berkman about of a technology called the Onion or something, which allows people to post without being, you know, seen. Are they using that in China?
You mean Onion routing?
Yeah.
So Tor?
Tor.
People are using Tor in China. I would say not a large percentage of internet users, but there are people who are using both Tor and other anonymity or circumvention tools of different kinds. But it's not a critical mass by any means at this point. The people who are most inclined to be political, kind of naturally, and who are therefore inclined to make a certain amount of effort, are using these tools, but the majority of people do not appear to be using these tools. And then I guess your first question is, there are groups around the world who are talking about a lot of these issues. I do find, however, that oftentimes it's kind of the people in North America and Western Europe talking to each other, and then they'll kind of talk about how we need to go save those poor people in the other parts of the world, and it's kind of this weird, rather than just kind of reaching out to people like Isaac Mao and saying, you know, it's not about us saving you. It's about everybody working together to figure out where we all, as global citizens, want the internet to go, and kind of work on this equally, rather than this kind of paternalistic, you know, we from the Western developed nations are going to come save you, you poor oppressed people in the developing authoritarian countries, which is often kind of a little bit of the tone that you get, which then causes people in China and elsewhere to switch off a little bit.
Yes, Persephone?
Going back to the kind of circumvention versus net nanny issues, I was in D.C. a couple weeks ago talking to some congressional staffers who've been to China about circumvention tools, and they said, oh, well, we met a bunch of bloggers in Shanghai, and they said everybody who needs that stuff knows mm-hmm. where it is and how to use it. Obviously, not totally true from what mm-hmm. you're saying and from what we know as well. But I'm curious more about on the stuff that's getting taken down off of Chinese platforms. Why do you think those people aren't trying to post things on platforms outside the country, or are they? I mean, is it okay. because there's not?
It's they because they have audience, because they'll have such a small audience that mm-hmm. it's not worth their while.
Right.
That's really the reason. I mean, everybody I've talked to who is struggling with censorship. So instead what they do, like I know a guy who has 10 blogs. Mm-hmm. And what he does is he takes the same post and he posts it across 10 different Chinese domestic blog hosting platforms. And then it'll get deleted from 3 and it'll stay up, you know. And so, like, mm-hmm. if you're an avid follower of his stuff, you kind of know where to find his stuff. But he finds that if he posts on an overseas thing, his audience just diminishes so much, it's not worth it, because he'll be blocked, and then not enough of the people who want to read his stuff are going to find it that way. So it's an interesting problem, and it is true. A lot of people in kind of certain social circles and on campuses do know how to use these circumvention tools. But part of the problem also is, do you know what you don't know? So you're only going to use the tools when you know what it is you're looking for, and then you feel strongly enough about wanting to get it. So one example of this is a woman named Nina Wu, who is the sister of a man named Wu Hao, who was detained for 5 months a couple years ago and was eventually released. And he was detained without trial, without access to a lawyer, without any due process of any kind. And after about a month of her trying to negotiate for his release unsuccessfully, she started blogging about her travails. And she wrote this blog post that was really revealing. She wrote that until her brother got detained, she had no idea that the Chinese internet was censored to the degree that it was. Because, you know, she's a fluent English-speaking, Western-educated person working for an American financial company. But
she said, well, I was always looking at entertainment and financial sites. I didn't go looking for political information. So I figured that censorship wasn't an issue in China. It was only when I started specifically searching for information about detention cases and started trying to go to human rights websites that I never naturally had an inclination to visit that I suddenly discovered how blocked our internet is. I had no idea. And I get this too. I have a lot of mainland Chinese students in Hong Kong. And they come down to Hong Kong, and they often comment, wow, I had no idea that our internet up in China, up in mainland China, is as censored as it is. I just hadn't noticed. And why? Because there's so much interesting stuff, including alpaca sheep and, you know, back dorm boys, and but also just, you know, a range of actually pretty interesting conversations, some of it, you know, politically fairly sophisticated. There's so much on the Chinese internet that a lot of people, you know, well, if you can't, you know, if you hit up against the firewall, if you hit up against blocks, you know, it's just that extra effort, and you know, maybe I just don't want to go there anyway because then it's you know, it's just going to bring trouble, and you know, some people are kind of worried. They, you know, they know about the quote unquote internet police. They don't know what the level of surveillance really is on their networks, and so you know, when in doubt, just don't do anything that's going to flag you as a troublemaker. And so there are some people who don't use circumvention because they just, you know, they just don't want to add to the things that would bring attention to themselves because they just, you know, they have other priorities with their life. So there are all kinds of different reasons why people don't make an effort to bust out of the firewall. But yeah, it's and there is this kind of perception, though, that, you know, to kind of come back to Professor Alford's point too about this, you know, the whole jello to the wall kind of idea. I mean, I do get the sense in Washington from talking to both people on the Hill and elsewhere around town that there is this notion that all we need to do is bring down the firewall and it'll just be kind of like bringing down the Iron Curtain in the Soviet bloc and the Chinese people will be freed. I mean, I often hear, not quite in those words, but essentially that point being made in Washington, and it's the Chinese situation. China today is not the former Soviet Union, and it's not East Berlin, and it's not Czechoslovakia under the Iron Curtain. It's a very different animal.
Probably time for two more questions, but questions are the things that end with question marks. in the back.
I was reading Bruce Sterling's latest novel this morning, and I came across a quote, which may be the next generation of what your response to this. But he's talking about